It is a very good afternoon. It's Niall Boyd. I gotta say, it's kind of hard to keep up with what's going on at the moment, isn't it? Ireland is in turmoil. If you thought the immigration process and crisis was bad, it's about to get a lot worse. We spoke to Nigel Farage going back a few months ago, and he said his advice to the Irish government was, you think things are bad now, you ain't seen nothing yet. Well, he certainly wasn't lying, because over the next 6 weeks, of course, with the Rwanda bill in the UK, it does look like things are going to get a lot worse. And now we have a diplomatic problem between Ireland and the UK. Now, the Gardaí are said to be deploying people to the border with Northern Ireland amid the row over the UK and asylum seekers. And Rishi Sunak has said he's not interested in taking back asylum seekers. They're all yours, mate. You can have them. Thousands eligible for UK's Rwanda scheme have lost contact with the Home Office. Just to give you some idea, because I don't know the exact numbers, but I'll find out in a second. To give you some idea, I suppose, in relation to this, there's possibly between 700,000 and 1.2 million illegal immigrants in the United Kingdom. Now, I don't know if the Home Office know the exact location of all those people. Many of them might be in direct provision centres or hotels or flotillas or whatever it happens to be. But will they be able to contact them all? The Justice Minister brings law to Cabinet to override Irish High Court ruling. That means the UK cannot be considered a safe country for return of applicants. But now, just on RTÉ at the moment, the Justice Minister, Helen McEntee, has said that she's bringing in legislation right away. It's been done to day to sort that out. She did say, by the way, and I'm just going to quote her here, she says, speaking on the way to the meeting to Cabinet, she said she hopes the legislation will be enacted in a matter of weeks so people can effectively be returned and it will allow for fast processing. So what is the solution for Ireland? What is the actual solution for Ireland? Well, to talk to me more a little bit about it is Paul Turner, who is a UK immigration barrister with Imperium Chambers, and he joins me on the line. Paul, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Noel.
Paul, this is a royal mess, pardon the pun. But Rishi Sunak, of course, wants to please the UK population because he's going to the polls, of course, this week. So he's not going to back down. This has turned into so much bureaucracy and a diplomatic problem between two countries now. Who wants, you know, the immigrants? Nobody seems to want them. Maybe we'll have to send them all back to France. I don't know if that's not even possible. So what's going to happen in the UK? And are they currently telling them, or, you know, sending out letters or whatever it happens to be to immigrants in the UK who might be in temporary accommodation that, listen, you know, you're going to be sent to Rwanda? What's happening?
Well, it's not often that you'll find me agreeing with what Nigel Farage says, but to say that things are going to get worse is pretty much an understatement. The Home Office have started sending out letters to people. They're not saying they're going to be removed, because that would essentially be telling them not to come. But it's not much more subtle than that. They're actually saying, please come in for an interview to discuss your immigration status. This is not a refusal. It's a letter of intent. And obviously the intent is that they will, or the fear is that they will be removed to Rwanda. They will be eligible for removal to Rwanda. Now, the big, and you were talking about numbers earlier, and you're right that there's probably a million or so illegal migrants in the UK, but there are 40,000 people that are within what might be described as could be removed by law to Rwanda. They're only going to remove about 300, 400 or so, but the other 39,000 are in fear. And I've had people contact me, and I know other lawyers have had people contact me, and people are scared to claim asylum who are in the country illegally and not even in the system because they fear going to being removed to Rwanda. So I'm not surprised that they're making use of the open border with the Republic of Ireland and just tripping over there.
I mean, I suppose this, you've travelled halfway across the world to get to the United Kingdom. You're hardly going to want to go back or go back to your own home country. So if you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound, I suppose. It's only another 100, 200 miles across the sea. So you might as well take the chance, I suppose.
Well, yeah. And this is one of the things that struck me, is that the whole purpose of the Rwanda scheme from this side of the Irish Sea was that it would save lives because people wouldn't make the crossing. And so it was pitched as being a humanitarian act, and they were doing it for the good of all humanity. But if people only have to travel 20 miles in a small boat to get to the United Kingdom, and then they realise that all they need to do is go to Wales or Liverpool and then trip across to Belfast and then travel across the open border to Ireland, UK becomes a staging country, much like Italy or Spain becomes a staging country. So people will still make the journey. I mean, to be honest, if you have, as you say, risked your life traveling from, say, Sudan, a war zone, or Afghanistan, and you've got all the way to the French coast, I would be very surprised if many people turn back.
No, well, you're not going to want to turn back. And so here's the problem now. Of course, the United Kingdom are not part of the EU anymore, so they can't send them back to France, because Rishi Sunak has said this already. He said, when we can send them back to France, you can send them back to us. So Rishi has not taken no for an answer, which surprised our Minister for Justice, because she was meant to have a meeting with James Cleverly, of course, yesterday, which has now been postponed. I think he cancelled it after the election, because he doesn't want to have anything to do with the Irish government right now. And now we have a situation where our Minister for Justice has said that 80% of the immigrants coming into Ireland to our IPAS centre at the moment are coming from the United Kingdom, and we have the Taoiseach, who is our second in command, or the Deputy Prime Minister, as you would know it, in the United Kingdom, disagreeing with her, saying actually that figure isn't actually correct, it's anecdotal, because we don't actually know the figures. We're not deporting people in this country. I don't know, Paul, if you're familiar with the Irish immigration system, but it's a bit of a soft touch approach. We tend not to deport people. We hand them a letter saying, listen, you need to leave, you're deported, and it's voluntary. They can do it if they want to. And when they were asked recently how many people have actually deported themselves voluntarily, they actually don't know. So we're already in a mess. We have a tent city in the middle of the city of Ireland, or Dublin, should I say, where you've got thousands of people living in tents because we've nowhere to put them. I mean, this is just turning into a complete mess. Now, if we send them back to the UK, what will the UK's response be, do you think? Rishi said he's going to send them back to us again. So what is the UK response going to be if we send them back again?
I think after the local elections, they'll be quietly assimilated. I think that the problem is that the... and to come back to this, the Good Friday Agreement is more important than a few hundred or a few thousand refugees. And I'm sure from Dublin, they're not going to want to... no one's going to be interested in putting in a hard border in Northern Ireland, whether one is even possible. And I'm a little bit older, so I can recall...
Well, nobody wants the memories coming back. Yeah, nobody wants the memories coming back of that, of course. And we did say the other day, the day that one man stands out in the middle of the M1 between Dublin and Belfast and puts his hand up to stop the traffic is the day that it'll all end, I think.
Well, that's it. I mean, I can't imagine there being a fence being put up. And short of a fence to stop people travelling from Northern Ireland to the Republic of Ireland, people are going to make that journey. And I think that at the moment, this has come probably for Rishi Sunak as a bonus before the local elections, because he can appear to play tough with the Republic of Ireland and say, we're not going to take these people back. And to say that it's proof that it's a deterrent. Well, the deterrent is to stop people make crossing the channel. Not moving them on to another country. It's the UK shipping the problem onto somebody else, not the UK stopping people from travelling.
Well, see, this is what we were talking about yesterday, this attitude that, you know, those bad Brits, look what they're doing to us. It's not really. That's just Britain looking after their own borders. It's now our problem. We have to deal with it. We can't be blaming other people for our problem. And you mentioned already, we're not going to put a hard border in. But one of the political parties aimed to this morning has suggested that we put a border down the Irish Sea. Now, I don't know how well that will sit with the unionists. So I don't think we'd sell that plan to them too quickly. But it is a suggestion, I suppose, for immigration purposes, which won't affect the common travel area.
Well, yes, I mean, the border in the Irish Sea has been, it's risen and sunk with the tide, really, hasn't it? I mean, it's also unworkable. I mean, the French and the British are unable to stop people travelling across the English Channel, which is a very short piece, or a very wide piece of water. Mm. Whereas the Irish Sea is a far more dangerous piece of water, and there's likely to be more people dying if they have to get on small boats in the west coast of Wales to make the journey across. So I can't see that working. And again, this is all, to some degree, from the UK's point of view, looking tough and saving money. Now, if you're going to have to put in a lot of boats and extra officers in Wales and the west of England to stop people... I can't ever see it happening. I can see a lot of hot air at the moment. Mm. And then hopefully after the local elections on the 2nd of May in the UK, the UK will quietly allow people to be put back over the border.
So you think they'll eventually take them back again at some point if we manage, of course, to bring through this legislation? Now, the legislation is not going to change a huge amount. I'm sure you're familiar with the High Court ruling here in Ireland going back 3 or 4 weeks ago, where now, obviously, Britain is not a safe country. But Rishi Sunak thinks to think, when he was smiling the other night and jesting about this whole thing, he's taking it all in the best of humour, saying that the Rwanda scheme, as much as it may not actually even be used too much, it's a deterrent. So it's a deterrent for people to go to Ireland.
Yes, and I mean, the disturbing thing from a lawyer's point of view is the UK, I'm sure Rishi Sunak would go on about it, goes on about the UK being the home of human rights and tolerance and all those good conservative values. But it's a bit disturbing as a lawyer to read that the Republic of Ireland has found that the UK is not a safe third country. The UK is in the same basket, according to the Irish courts, as Rwanda itself.
I mean, it was safe country the last time I was there, but I suppose it's this fear. I mean, when you've spoken to your own colleagues within the circle, within the bar, are they telling you that they're advising their clients? Well, yeah, obviously not officially, but advising their clients, listen, if I was you, I wouldn't be presenting yourself at the Home Office. If I was you, I'd be heading off there now to Dublin and they look after you, sure.
Well, I'm not sure that they're pointing him in the direction of Dublin and advising them which pubs to visit. But I do know that they are, when asked the question, what's going to happen, because I've got a letter, they are saying you are at risk, especially if you're, say, an Albanian, of being detained and you are going to struggle to get bail. Now, given, as we touched upon earlier, people who have spent a huge amount of money and resources in getting here, that is, in effect, saying, if you want to be detained, go and report. And that was how it's going to be received. And so it would be improper and wrong for lawyers to say, don't go and report. But by setting out the consequences of going to report clearly to their clients, one can see the inference that clients who are not stupid will draw.
I mean, when we look at just before the Rwanda bill came in, and we know the controversy around the Rwanda bill, they've been trying to get that in for 2 years now. But when we look at how Britain is dealing with immigration, say, unlike Ireland, maybe, are they actually deporting people? For example, if people are coming from Georgia or Albania, who are clearly economic migrants and not fleeing war or whatever it happens to be, are they being deported? Or similar to Ireland, are they just being handed voluntary immigration order or papers? Or is there a task force actually going around and, you know, collecting people and putting them on a plane and sending them home again?
Well, the answer to that is the numbers of removals, forced removals, excepting Rwanda, where there is an agreement to send people back. I think it was about 1,200 or so last year, excluding criminals. So if we had, say, 70,000 people coming in or 60,000 people claiming asylum, and there's only 1,200 people being removed, then that, again, people will do the maths themselves. And as you touched upon, this is the asylum seekers, the million or so illegal migrants that have overstayed their visas or fouled asylum seekers over the last 20 years that never went home. If they're caught and they're found not to have any reason to be in the United Kingdom, they are probably among that 1,200. So if you think that we have a population of, say, a million people with no permission to be in the United Kingdom and only 1,200 are being removed per year, it's not much of a deterrent. And this has always been, and the figures have dropped off from about the last 15 years when there was about 12,000 enforced removals. So now there isn't a team. They spend 400 million on immigration enforcement, but in reality remove hardly anybody.
In relation to, just finally, when people are coming into the United Kingdom, you'd be more familiar than me with this. You know, similar to Ireland, we seem to have a problem in actually getting background checks done on anybody, because it does look like the majority of people who come to our ports don't have identification. Now, they get onto a plane or a boat with identification, clearly, because they have to have it to get on the boat or plane, but somewhere in the middle it's destroyed by the time they actually get here, because they feel, you know, that would be an easier way to get to Ireland. Is it similar in the UK? Are people arriving, you know, at the ports with no identification, no passport, and is there background checks done? Because we found out here that although a fingerprint might be taken to see if they've, you know, arrived at any other European city and claimed asylum, there's no background checks done at all to Eurodat. I mean, is there been background checks done?
The Eurodat was very useful for the Dublin Convention in returning people, but are there background checks? Well, if you think about it, a lot of people come from Syria or Afghanistan. Now, there is simply no way of us checking whether or not that person is a criminal or poses a threat to the United Kingdom or Republic of Ireland when they arrive from Afghanistan. Most people that come by way of the small boats from third world countries do not have travel documents. Therefore, they can make up whatever name they wish to make up, and there's no real way of verifying it. And from countries that are essentially fallen apart, such as, say, Afghanistan, Syria, South Sudan, I would imagine it would be impossible to say with any degree of certainty that the name the person gives is actually their real identity. It tends to be, Niall, that when an individual from, say, Algeria commits a horrible crime, for an example, that then they discover that this person had assumed a different identity and had a criminal record in the past. But for a lot of people from countries that are basket cases or failed states, people can just pick whatever name they want. There's no way of verifying it. and there's no real punishment if they do adopt a different name.
Well, look, it does seem like this is going to get worse rather than better. There's been almost suggestion this country could bring the government down because of the way they're dealing currently with the immigration crisis, particularly with the accommodation crisis we already have in Ireland, where there's nowhere for anyone to live anymore, and never mind if they can even afford it. But I got to thank you very much indeed, Paul. I'm sure we'll chat again after the elections. Do you think Rishi's going to do well in these elections, or will he be destroyed?
I think the question is just how badly he will do. What I would say is watch out for the two mayor elections of up north in England and the West Midlands. If he holds on to that one of them, then he'll consider it to be a victory. If he loses both of them, then I imagine that the right wingers will be calling for his head again and saying that Penny Mordaunt is the saviour of the country. But we shall see. And it'll be a lovely to speak to you again, Niall.
Thank you very much indeed, Paul Turner, who is with UK Immigration Barrister with Imperium Chambers. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. Now, in other news just before we go, in case you didn't know already, because loads of people congratulate me if you've just tuned in, I am running, of course, for Europe this year in the Dublin constituency. Yes, I want to be an MEP and represent Ireland and Dublin, the people of Dublin and the people of Ireland. I will be a thorn in the EU side. I promise you that. They will know that I'm coming. Thank you to everybody, by the way, for all your support. At this stage, according to some of the probability polls and the betting, it seems that I'm doing extremely well. But that's not a reason for you not to vote for me. We want to give the government and the establishment parties a good kick in the hole, because that's what they need. Let's do what we did during the referendum. Let's do what we did during the last general election. Let's give the government a kick where they need it. But don't go to the opposition. Because, of course, the opposition have been the worst opposition in history. Sinn Féin, who were the party of U-turns, who were waffling on last night and up front about how they support people when it comes to the immigration crisis. They weren't saying that about a year ago when some of their own candidates were out marching for the all refugees are welcome. So realistically, we cannot support an open border system. The Social Democrats, of course, have a soft touch approach to it. So do the people before profit, who'd be quite happy to let everybody wander into this country. But I won't. And I'll be in Europe fighting your corner. I'll be the one who'll be standing up fighting for Ireland to make sure that we don't lose any more legislation in this country or control over any more legislation and our sovereignty. I will make sure we take control of that legislation. I would have never signed the EU Migration Pact. And if it comes before the European Union again, and of course it will be updated as time goes on, I will be voting no every single time, because Ireland needs to control its own borders, its own sovereignty and its own legislation. Remember, 75% of the legislation comes from European directives that we have. So it's important that we have good representation. And people often say to me, "Nah, but if it's just you, sure, what use is your hand going up?" Because you look at the rest of Europe at this moment in time, there's a shift happening, because people like you all over Europe are getting cheesed off and they're voting for change. And that's what I want you to do. And if I'm there with those other people voting for change, we can all make a difference to the laws and the sovereignty of countries within the European Union. The European Union was meant to be put together for countries to assist each other and help each other. But because of the type of MEPs we've been voting for the last God knows how many years, that hasn't been the way it's been. It's been one side only. Well, not anymore. That's about to change. Politics is changing worldwide. Be part of that change and vote for me on the June the 7th, Niall Boylan. Give me your number one vote and tell all your friends in Dublin to do it as well. Go to our website, by the way, please. We're going to be having a few fundraisers, and because I'm not the richest person in the world. We do need you to donate there as well. If you can donate a few quid, you can go to the website, nileboylanforeurope.ie. It's on the screen there. Niall Boylan. Over here, yeah. nileboylanforeurope.ie. Go there and you get all the information you need. So before we finish up, let's watch this. Hi, my name is Niall Boylan. Of course, you know me from the radio station. I'm talking to people every single day. And you know what? They're sick of the government. I love this city. I love Ireland. I love the crack. I love the cave meal of Falcha that it's offered us for thousands of years. But we need change. And over the last 4 years in particular, I've noticed those callers are getting angrier and very frustrated because they feel voiceless. They're listening to a government who are not listening to them. An opposition party who don't seem to oppose. They've ignored us on so many things, so many important issues. They've ignored us on mass immigration with a reckless immigration policy. They've ignored us on healthcare with waiting lists getting longer.
There's 4,000 children in temporary accommodation as the homeless numbers rise and rise in this country. But what have they done about it? What have they actually done? They've made promises but done nothing. Our business communities are suffering with closures every single day caused by skyrocketing energy costs and a government that refuses to reduce the VAT rate back to 9% to help those businesses stay open. And many people say they don't feel safe in our city, with crime figures that seem to be getting worse every single day. And that's why I'm here. You can see the doll in the background. And remember, in that building in the doll in the background, very few of those people are actually listening to you. But some people are listening. Michael Collins, Michael Fitzmaurice, and Richard O'Donoghue, Independent Ireland. And that's why I've decided to run as a European MEP and be the real voice of Dublin for Independent Ireland, for honesty, integrity, and real common sense. I'm not a politician. In fact, I'm not even part of the establishment. But I think that's what we really need. We need real change. And we need people to stand up and be counted and represent the people of Dublin. I'm a proud Dubliner. I'm a proud Irishman. I'm a good listener. And I'll speak honestly and openly for you, the people of Dublin and the people of Ireland. So please vote for me, Niall Boylan, on the 7th of June. And I'll be the real voice of Dublin and the real voice of Ireland in Europe.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.